To become resilient, children need environments where they feel safe and comfortable, and they know what to expect so that their sensitized, overreactive stress systems can gradually become calmer and more smoothly regulated. That's a line from Dr. Bruce Perry's book, The Boy Who Was Raised as a Dog, which is a great read for parents, teachers, and coaches. I highly recommend it. I know, though, that when we hear about overreactive stress systems and regulated stress systems, or even just the term brain science, that some of that stuff can seem to go over our heads. But what Dr. Perry is saying in that book, and what he said in our conversation with him a year ago, is that resiliency, its development, isn't about how much adversity and stress we face or how little adversity and stress we face. It's about the environment and the relationships we have in the midst of that stress. We as coaches, we've got a responsibility, we've got a duty to coach, to lead in a way that is helpful and healthy. And the reality is that many coaching practices and methods aren't healthy and helpful. Every one of us as coaches needs to reflect on our behaviors. We need to reflect in an informed way on our behaviors and the environment that we create. And we need to ask ourselves, are we helping or hurting? In today's conversation, the second half of our conversation with Megan Bartlett, Megan shares some important information that we need to consider when we are going down that path of reflecting on our coaching. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, brought to you by Thrive on Challenge. I'm JP Nurbin, joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week, in about 30 minutes, we discuss important principles and strategies of transformational leadership. At Thrive on Challenge, we help coaches to raise the standards and strengthen the relationships in their program because we know this type of culture produces better leaders, better people, and better results. To learn more about how we can help you, go to thriveonchallenge.com, where you can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter and get the coaching notes to every episode of this podcast. So we've already talked about how sports can not only help athletes by staying active during the pandemic, but also through human connection, you know, how we and their teammates are relating to them, and also by working with them through this shared experience, like Nate said. You know, we're all going through something similar together here, both athlete and coach. Now, one thing I remember, though, that Dr. Bruce Perry talked about on our podcast and his books, and you mentioned it earlier in our conversation, is that people need environments, right? They need environments where they feel safe, they feel comfortable, and they know what to expect. Creating that environment, though, creating that environment within our team, like that's our responsibility as coaches. That's our job. Now, another thing that you mentioned earlier that maybe not everyone caught that I want to kind of come back to was that these positive benefits from sport that we're talking about, we're assuming that coaches are doing it right. And I think you're kind of pointing out something really important, that sports are actually creating more stress for many people because of the environment we create and the behaviors of us as coaches. I was hoping you could share what are some of those common behaviors of coaches that you see that are harmful and not helpful.
Not to dwell on the word unpredictability too much in this conversation, but I think that's one of the things that I see the most in young people or in coaches, and the way it impacts young people is when they don't know how their coach will react. Right, the uncertainty of coach behavior, I think, is one of the hardest things for it's one of the things that gets the most in the way of the environment feeling safe. And again, that goes back to all the things we've talked about predictability. Right? So if you are a young person who has some stress in your life, and maybe you're still working on all of your own behaviors, right? You're still working on being the best. You're still working on being the best at following directions, and you're still working on all of the skills that we know young people are still learning as they go through this process and can learn, you know, in such a positive way in sport. The adults really need to be modeling that those behaviors, what those behaviors look like in a consistent and predictable way. And when we scream at referees, when we react in, when we're experiencing our own stress in ways that's different than maybe we would if things were a little bit, you know, sort of more normal on a given day, then all the young person hears or sees is, I'm not, I don't know, I can't trust this person. I don't know what this person will do. And so I think, you know, the thing that I always try and remind coaches is that a dysregulated adult can't regulate a dysregulated child. Right. So a dysregulated adult can't regulate a dysregulated child. And so the number one thing that we have to do as coaches is think about and be really intentional about our own regulation. And in this moment, when we're all dealing with more stress than we are used to dealing with, that's hard too. Right. And but if we want to create the safe and predictable and relationship rich and sort of elevate the role of physical activity and make sure that we're creating manageable patterns of stress and all of those things for young people, then we have to be regulated too. So if we, you know, meet a dysregulated young person as a dysregulated adult, then the spiral of not, you know, sort of lack of predictability, a lack of safety, just sort of goes spinning off. Mm-hmm. But if a young person comes to us up here and we can stay down here, then because we're such social creatures, because our brains sort of are so inclined to respond to the way people react to us, then a young person's much more likely to start coming down towards us than if we meet them up where they are. And I think that's a huge thing. It's a huge blind spot for a lot of coaches. And I think it's going to be even harder for a lot of coaches now when it's, you know, when they are thinking about, am I keeping kids safe? Am I safe? Is this season going to be 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months? You know, all that extra stress is making us less regulated and then making it harder to help them be more regulated.
I think that's such a great point. And it's tough. It's tough when we're going through stress to stay regulated. I know that I've had some less than stellar moments with my 5-year-old and 3-year-old.
Totally.
And I consistently remind myself and my wife that, you know, we just got to go back. We got to apologize. You know, we have to try to repair that rupture. I think a younger version of me as a coach would say, well, I'm very consistent. I tell my players if they have bad attitude or bad effort, I'm going to yell at them, you know? So I know now that there's a better way of doing things. It's what I'm passionate about is that better way. You are too. I just have to ask this one question here as we're kind of winding down and Nate's got a few other things for you as well. But, you know, when we're talking about this unregulated coach, this dysregulated coach, you know, a lot of it we're talking about is yelling, which is very common for us in sports. Is there a time and place where you're like, oh, that's totally fine for that coach to yell at an athlete, you know, to use some of that dysregulated emotion and anger to get your players to wake up, work harder, to snap out of it, you know, because we want our kids to be tough. We want them to be resilient in these very, very challenging times.
Yeah, sure. It's such a great question because I think it really is at the heart of what some norms around sport are, right? Every time you turn on the TV, you see, for the most part, in big time sports, you see coaches. It's not unusual, let's say, to see a coach yelling at an athlete. And I think what we don't see when we see that is all the work that coach is doing sort of not on TV to make a safe environment for kids where if I do get dysregulated and scream, then it's not sort of, it's not a game over. I think the challenge is that what we don't see are the young people for whom it was a game changer or a deal breaker, right? The other thing is that the young people who tend to make it to that level where Nick Saban or Tom Izzo is screaming in their face are the young people who have some built-in resilience, who were able to sort of build that skill and have, in lots of cases, either a combination of some more biological ability to manage that with some more practice and experience doing that. And that often comes from sort of relational health and other parts of their lives and other things that help them buffer from that stress. So I think that oftentimes what coaches believe they're doing intentionally or unintentionally is toughening kids up, right? Because they may have a boss who screams at them, right? And we want them to be able to manage that situation. So I think that if, I mean, I think there's a better way to do it, like you said. And if you do get dysregulated and you are a coach who sometimes just sort of loses their cool and tries to add that extra pressure to young people, then you have to do more of the work around it to make sure that they know why you did it. And when you did it intentionally, and when you did it unintentionally, and when you did it unintentionally, like you said, apologizing to your five-year-old, apologizing to your kids, and saying, this is what it looks like when I get dysregulated. And let me, you know, sort of share that with you. So I think it's not as easy as it's sometimes okay or it's sometimes not okay. Sometimes it's okay with some kids if we're doing the work around it. There will be kids for whom it is too much for them to handle and may keep them from, you know, and may help them blow out of whatever circumstance they're in. And that's the kid I'm worried about, right? Not every program has to worry about that kid. I worry about that kid in my work. I want to make sure that every kid, no matter what they've been through, ends up in a sport experience if they want to be, with a coach who doesn't create more stress for them. And just because some kids can handle some stress, I still want that kid to have the experience that they deserve. So it's, I wish it was a simple answer to that question, but it's right at the heart of what we're trying. You know, I think it's right at the heart of the work we try to do with coaches. And I think it's right at the heart of the work that you all do with coaches is say, when is this okay? And when is this not okay? And part of that is knowing your kids and knowing and being able to be reflective of every moment and say, yeah, they can tolerate that. No, they shouldn't have to tolerate that. I have to apologize. Because I think often the coaches aren't doing that reflection work about whether or not it is okay for them, whether or not it actually is part of a learning experience for them.
You know, Megan, I think another thing that is lacking in that whole conversation about coaches yelling or using anger as a motivator is that we typically observe the survivors. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're talking about the Division I athletes that are getting chewed out on national television, they're the ones, as you mentioned, that may have those skills or have demonstrated that they're able to handle that. And many of them would say, I tolerate that. Well, they wouldn't use that language, but they say, I take that because I know coach loves me because of the things you've said before. So we get a testimony of the survivor, but we never hear from the kid that quit when they were 12 because the parent coach got too angry with them, or they didn't like being yelled at, or they didn't have the relationship to be able to balance that. And so it's unfortunate in the coaching industry that we don't have a balanced perspective, because very rarely do we ever interview somebody that's 8, 9, 10, 12, 16, 17 and say, when they left the sport, how much did the coach influence your decision to leave, or your decision, you know, make it difficult for you to walk away? I mean, was there a relationship there that you didn't want to sever, but there were reasons to leave? And we just don't investigate that. And so it's very hard, I think, when JP and I are, you know, working with coaches and trying to convince them there's a better way, we don't have the other side of the story because nobody ever wants to find it.
That's right. And they're getting away with it, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're getting away with the yelling at kids because those are the survivor kids, right? And I think you're exactly right that we're not hearing from those folks. What we do find sometimes when we talk to coaches about this is maybe not as a coach, they can't see it through this lens, but sometimes if they've been players and they remember some of their peers who didn't make it, then there's an opportunity to see it through that lens, to have a little bit of empathy for the kids for whom they can't tolerate that way of coaching. And I hope that one of the hopeful pieces here is that I think at the truly elite levels that we're starting to see more coaches who look like Steve Kerr than look like other, you know, turning purple in the face, yelling up and down the sidelines. And maybe that's going to help swing the pendulum a little in terms of how you can still get great performance out of young people. And in this case, to me, most professional athletes are young, except for Tom Brady. But how you can get a great performance from your athletes, even in the absence of that. And so I hope there's starting to be more models of that, that will at least provide some of the other opportunity, because I think otherwise it really, it's hard not to be dug in, because we don't have all of the images are that this works and it works with a certain group of kids. So I think you're exactly right that the lack of stories or the lack of data around the other side is a huge stumbling block here.
Yeah. And not only that, but there's a stigma associated. Yeah. If a kid was to say, I couldn't handle the coach yelling, then there's a weakness there, right? And so
absolutely.
It's not even encouraged that anyone would ever acknowledge that.
You're right. You're exactly right. Maybe the silver lining to this pandemic is that coaches may see that young people who used to be able to tolerate this are having a hard time. And if they can scratch the surface a little bit about why, then maybe they'd start to understand, yeah, in this moment, my kids are experiencing more stress in their lives and that makes them less tolerant to this. I wonder if that was what was happening with the kid who quit last year. I wonder if that's what's happening with the kid who I would butt heads with, or who, you know, sort of left unexpectedly or blew out of the program in some way. There's an opportunity for a little more reflection in how we see young people show up over the next couple of months.
Megan, I want to follow up on one more aspect of coaching modeling, and we've mentioned that in terms of stress regulation. But one of the things you hear a lot of in terms of how do coaches help players through the pandemic is they model the way that they themselves are reacting to uncertainty. And I think part of the challenge for coaches is that balance between empathy and understanding the challenges. And yet there's part of us as coaches that want to be the bronze statue that says nothing's going to get to us and we're going to plow ahead. And as I've thought about this, and JP and I were talking a little bit about this off air, this seems to be a challenge that is very unique in the sense that the adult in the situation, the coach, and the player or the kid in the situation are probably experiencing the stress in a similar way and are going through it together, maybe more than any other experience we would have. I mean, if you think about a kid that is struggling with divorce, well, their parents are experiencing that very different from the child. So it's hard to walk through them together because it's so different, right? But mm-hmm. This is maybe one of those unique aspects where, as coaches, we can really understand what it feels like to have a game taken away or to go into quarantine or, you know, deal with the uncertainty. So when we hear this advice that coaches need to show up and model, mm-hmm. What would you say to coaches is most important in terms of just that question and that approach?
Great question. I think the thing that it makes me think of right off the bat is when we And this is something that I recommend to coaches who are working with young people always, but maybe feels even more important now, is that I think you're right that coaches, maybe too often coaches come from the, I'm going to, you know, sort of be strong. I'm going to be this, you know, sort of pillar of strength, and I'm going to hold all the emotion for my team. And sometimes that also looks like I'm expecting you to do what I want you to do, you know, do as I say, not as I say. And I think because that's a dynamic that exists in sports anyway, one of the things that we often advise coaches who are working with young people who are more sensitive to unpredictability or have experienced more overwhelming stress, or is that they need to understand not just the what, but sort of the why and the how sometimes more than coaches are willing to give. I think often coaches are very good at the what, sometimes good at the how, and less good at the why. And sort of coaching that piece out loud, sort of saying, here's why I'm making the substitution. Here's why we're going to work on this drill. Here's why I need you to do this thing that I keep asking you over and over and over again to do, and you just don't seem to be doing it. Is that that why piece becomes really important, and that almost narrating of your process is such a valuable thing for them to learn, right? They start to learn how you make decisions. They start to learn what you pay attention to on the court. They start to learn all the things that sort of go on in your brain so that they can build their brains up, right? They're still working on developing their prefrontal cortex and all the rational thinking things that go on up there. And so I think that's even more important now, right? Is that stress makes it harder for us to use that part of our brain. Stress makes it that we're going through together will put in stark relief the ways in which we get dysregulated. And so that narration piece, I think, is really important, because I think it's about modeling, but it's also about modeling knowing that we all are going to need some grace in that, that we're all going to do things wrong, that we're all going to, you know, be dysregulated now and then, right? It's sort of being willing to know that and being willing to say, here's what happened when, you know, I was having a particularly bad day, and I know we're all having bad days sometimes, and here's what it looked like for me, and this is why I snapped at you, or this is why I did that thing that I wouldn't want to do normally. So I think that advice of modeling is really important. And I would say maybe even more important is the modeling reflection and modeling the process around what's going on as much as the actual behaviors.
Yeah. Megan, I just really want to thank you for coming to the podcast today. You are a kindred spirit, not just as far as your vision of what sports can do, what coaches can do, but I also think on just similar thinking to what Nate and I have as far as what that looks like in action. You know, and I think it's one thing to sit back and say, hey, we want sports to make a difference. Sports are great for young people. But what that actually looks like, you know, in action is honestly, it's debatable. You know, some people have some other very different ideas around how they can do that. And I think we're very similarly aligned. So having a conversation, especially in this very challenging time, I know you've got a small child at home too, so you got your hands full. So we really do appreciate you coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I love listening to the conversations you guys have, and just couldn't agree more about being aligned. And I think the world needs to hear from people like you who, you know, I'm the youth development lady that everybody's like, yeah, yeah, kumbaya, right? And they need to hear that this doesn't get in the way of performance, right? That actually this can aid performance. And so for coaches who coach at the level that you guys coach at, and are trying to bring that to that world, is really important.
Coaches, if you haven't already, check out weallcoach.com to get informed about trauma and stress. and its impact on our athletes and even ourselves. Also, we've taken some great notes on this conversation with Megan Bartlett. If you'd like to get the notes to this episode and all episodes of the Coaching Culture Podcast, you could subscribe using the link in the details of this episode or by going to thriveonchallenge.com. Lastly, if you have enjoyed this podcast, the Coaching Culture Podcast, please subscribe so you don't miss a single episode and leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts.